Due religion or greed religion is formal, ritualistic, ambitious, desire-oriented. It is full of desires. See, the Mohammedan concept of paradise or the Christian concept of paradise or the Hindu concept of paradise, degrees may be different, but this is a very strange thing, that all that these people say one has to deny oneself in this life, they go on providing in heaven. You are to be celibate here just to achieve heaven, where beautiful apsaras, always young, stuck at the age of 16, are available. Mohammedans said, don't take any alcoholic beverage, but in heaven, rivers of wine. No need to be worried. But this seems to be absurd. If something is wrong, it is wrong. How it can become good and right in heaven? Then Umar Khayyam is right. He says, if in heaven rivers of wine are available, then let us practice here. Because if we go unpracticed, it will be difficult to live in paradise. So let this life be a little rehearsal, so that we have the taste and we have the capacity. Then Umar Khayyam seems to be more logical. In fact, he is joking against the Mohammedan concept of paradise. It is foolish. The whole concept is foolish. But people become religious out of greed. One thing is certain, that whatsoever you accumulate here will be taken away. Death will take it away. So the greedy person wants to accumulate something which cannot be taken by death. But the accumulating idea, the desire to accumulate remains there. Now he accumulates virtue. Virtue is the coin of the other world. He goes on accumulating virtue so he can live in the other world forever and forever in lust. This type of man is basically worldly. His other world is nothing but a projection of this world. And he will do, because he has desires and he has ambition and he has a powerless. But his doing will not be of the heart. It will be a sort of manipulation. Mullah Nasruddin and his young son were driving in the country one winter. It was snowing. Their bullock cart broke down. They finally reached a farmhouse and were welcomed for the night. The house was cold, and the attic in which they were invited to spend the night was like an ice box. Stripping to his underwear, the mullah jumped into a feather bed and pulled the blankets over his head. The young man was slightly embarrassed. "Excuse me, Dad," he said, "don't you think we ought to say our prayers before going to bed?" The mullah stuck one eye out from under the cover. "Son," he said, "I keep prayed up ahead for situations just like this one." Then things are just on the surface. Greed and fear and ignorance are just on the periphery. these three sorts of religions, and they are all mixed together. You cannot find a person who is absolutely purely of the first type, or the second type, or the third type. Because wherever greed is, there is fear. Wherever fear is, there is greed. And wherever greed and fear exist, there is ignorance, because they cannot exist without them. So I am not talking about pure types. I am classifying simply so that you can understand well. Otherwise, they are all mixed. These three are the lowest type of religion. Should not be called religions. Then there is the fourth type, the religion of logic, calculation, cleverness. It is do plus don't religion, worldly, materialistic, opportunistic, intellectual, theoretical, scriptural, traditional. This is the religion of the pandits, the learned scholars, who tries to prove God by logic, who thinks that the mysteries of life can be understood through the head. This type of religion creates theology. It is not really religion, but just a very faint carbon copy of it. But all the churches are based on it. When a Buddha exists in the world, or a Muhammad, or a Krishna, or a Christ, then pandits and scholars and learned people, intellectually clever and cunning people, gather together around them, and they start working hard. What Jesus means? They start creating a theology, a creed, a dogma, a church. They are very successful people because they are very logical people. They cannot give you God, they cannot give you truth, but they give you great organizations. They give you the Catholic Church, the Protestant Church. They give you great theologies, just clevernesses, nothing of the real experience, just intellectual, head-oriented. Their whole edifice is as if one is making a house of cards. A small breeze and the house is gone. Their whole edifice is such as if one is trying to sail in a boat of paper. It looks like real boat. The form is of the boat, but it is a paper boat. It is doomed. It is already doomed. Logic is a paper boat. And life cannot be understood through logic. Through logic, a philosophy is born, but not a real religion. These four are ordinarily known as religion. Fifth, sixth and seventh are the real religions. Fifth is the religion based on intelligence, not on logic, not on intellect, but on intelligence. And there is a lot of difference between intellect and intelligence. Intellect is logical. Intelligence is paradoxical. Intellect is analytical, intelligence is synthetical. Intellect divides, cuts into pieces to understand the thing. Science is based on intellect, dissection, division, analysis. Intelligence joins things together, makes a whole out of parts, because this is one of the greatest understandings, that the part exists through the whole, not vice versa. And the whole is not just a sum of the parts, it is more than the sum. For example, you can have a rose flower. You can go to a scientist, to a logician. You can ask him, I want to understand this rose flower. What he will do? He will dissect it. He will separate all the elements that are making it a flower. When you go next, you will find the flower gone. Instead of the flower, there will be few bottles labeled. The elements have been separated. But one thing is certain, there will not be any bottle on which will be the label beauty. Because beauty is not matter. And beauty does not belong to parts. Once you dissect a flower, once the wholeness of the flower is gone, beauty is also gone. Beauty belongs to the whole. It is the grace that comes to the whole. It is more than the sum. Then only parts are there. You can dissect a man. The moment you dissect, life disappears. Then you know only dead body, a corpse. You can find out how much aluminium is there and how much iron and how much water, 80% or something. You can find the whole mechanism, the lungs, the kidneys, everything. But one thing is not there, life. One thing is not there that was the most valuable. One thing is not there that we wanted to understand really, and everything else is there. Now even scientists are becoming alert that when you take blood out of a man's bloodstream and you examine it, it is no more the same blood. Because inside the bloodstream of the man, it was alive, throbbing with life. Now it is just a corpse. It cannot be the same because the gestalt has changed. You can take the color of the rose flower separate from it, but is it the same color? It looks the same, but it cannot be the same. Where is that fragileness? Where is that aliveness, that throb of life? When it was in the rose flower, it was in a totally different arrangement, and life was present. It was full of presence. God was there, beating in its heart. Taken out, the part is there, but you cannot say the part is the same. It cannot be, because the part exists in the whole. Intellect dissects, analyzes. It is the instrument of science. Intelligence is the instrument of religion. It joins together. Hence, the greatest science of spirituality we have called yoga. Yoga means the methodology to join. Yoga means to put things together. God is the greatest totality. All things together. God is not a person. God is a presence. The presence, when the total is functioning in a great harmony, the trees and the birds and the earth and the stars and the moon and the sun and the rivers and the ocean, all together. That togetherness is God. If you dissect, you will never find God. Dissect a man, you cannot find the presence that was making him alive. Dissect the world, you cannot find the presence that is God. Intelligence is the method to join things together. An intelligent person is very synthetical. He always looks for a higher whole, because the meaning is always in the higher whole. He always looks for something higher in which the lower is dissolved and functions as a part, functions as a note in the harmony of the whole, functions, gives its own contribution to the orchestra of the whole, but is not separate from it. Intelligence moves upwards, intellect moves downwards. Intellect goes to the cause. Please follow it. The point is delicate. Intellect goes to the cause. Intelligence goes to the goal. Intelligence moves into the future. Intellect moves into the past. Intellect reduces everything to the lowest denominator. If you ask what is love, intellect will say it is nothing but sex, the lowest denominator. If you ask prayer, what is prayer? The intellect will say it is nothing but repressed sex. Ask intelligence, what is sex? And intelligence will say it is nothing but the seed of prayer. It is the potential love. Intellect reduces to the lowest. It reduces everything to the lowest. Ask intellect, what is lotus? And it will say nothing, just an illusion. The reality is the mud. Because the lotus comes out of the mud and again falls back into the mud. The mud is the real. Lotus is just an illusion. Mud remains, lotus comes and goes. Ask intelligence, what is mud? And intelligence will say, it is the potentiality of being a lotus. Then mud disappears and millions of lotuses flower. Intelligence goes to the higher and higher and the higher, and the whole effort is to reach to the ultimate, to the pinnacle of existence, because things can be explained only through the higher, not through the lower. You don't explain through the lower, you explain away. And when the lower becomes too important, all beauty is lost, all truth, all good, everything that has any significance is lost. Then you start crying, where is meaning in life? In the West, science destroyed every value and reduced everything to matter. Now everybody is worried, what is the meaning of life? Because meaning exists in the higher whole. See, you are alone. You feel, what is the meaning of life? Then you fall in love with a woman. A certain meaning arises. Now two have become one, a little higher. A single man is a little lower than a couple. A couple is little higher. Two things have joined together. Two opposite forces have mingled. The feminine and the male energies. Now it is more of a circle. That's why in India we have the concept of Ardhanarishwar. Shiva is painted as half woman and half man. The concept of Ardhanarishwar says that man is half, woman is half. When a man and woman meet in deep love, a higher reality arises. Certainly greater, more complex, because two energies are meeting. Then a child is born. Now there is a family, more meaning. Now the father feels a meaning in his life. The child has to be brought up. He loves the child. He works hard, but now work is no more work. He is working for his child, for his beloved, for his home. He works, but the hardness of the work has disappeared. He is not dragging it. Tired of the whole day, he comes dancing home. Seeing the smile on his child face, he is tremendously happy. A family is a higher unit than the couple, and so on and so forth. And God is nothing but the communion of all, the greatest family of all. I would like you to disappear in the whole. I would like you to be so absorbed in the whole that you remain individual, but you become part of a greater unity, bigger than you. Meaning arises immediately whenever you become part of a greater unity. When a poet writes a poem, meaning arises. Because the poet is not alone, he has created something. When a dancer dances, meaning arises. When a mother gives birth to a child, meaning arises. Left alone, cut from everything else, isolated like an island, you are meaningless. Joined together, you are meaningful. Bigger the whole, bigger is the meaning. That's why I say God is the biggest conceivable whole. And without God, you cannot attain to the highest meaning. God is not a person. God is not sitting somewhere. Those ideas are just stupid. God is the total presence of existence, the being, the very ground of being. God exists wherever there is union. Wherever there is yoga, God comes into existence. You are walking alone. God is fast asleep. Then suddenly you see somebody and you smile. God is awakened. The other has come in. Your smile is not isolated. It is a bridge. You have thrown a bridge towards the other. The other has also smiled. There has been a response. Between you both arises the space that I call God. A little throb. When you come to the tree and you sit by the side of the tree, completely oblivious of the existence of tree, God is fast asleep. Then suddenly you look at the tree and an upsurge of feeling for the tree, and God has arisen. Wherever there is love, God is. Wherever there is response, God is. God is the space. It exists wherever union exists. That's why I say love is the purest possibility of God, because it is the subtlest union of energies. Forget God, love will do, but never forget love, because God alone won't do. Intelligence is discrimination, understanding, truth is the key word. Sat. The man who moves through intelligence moves towards sat, truth. Higher than intelligence is the sixth type of religion. I call it the religion of meditation. Meditation is awareness, spontaneity, sahajmanus, spontaneous man, freedom. It is non-traditional. It is radical, revolutionary, individual. The key word is chit, consciousness. Intelligence is still the highest form of intellect. Intelligence is the purest form of intellect. The ladder is the same. Intellect is going on the same ladder downwards. Intelligence is going upwards, but the ladder is the same. In meditation, the ladder is thrown. Now, no more any movement on the same ladder, neither upwards nor downwards. Now no more movement, but a state of no movement inside. A drowning into oneself, a sinking in. Intellect is other-oriented. Intelligence is also other-oriented. Intellect cuts the other, intelligence joins the other, but both are other-oriented. So if you understand rightly, the first four types of religion I don't call religion. They are pseudo-religions. Real religion starts with the fifth type, and that is the lowest. But real. Sixth type of religion is that of meditation, consciousness, chit. One simply moves into oneself. All directions are dropped. All dimensions dropped. One simply tries to be oneself. One simply tries just to be. That is where Zen exists, the sixth type of religion. The very word Zen means dhyana, meditation. Then comes the highest type of religion, the seventh, the religion of ecstasy, samadhi. Just as the fifth type has the keyword sat, truth, and the sixth type, the religion of meditation, has the keyword chit, consciousness, the seventh, the highest, has anand, bliss, ecstasy. That is the keyword, satchidanand, truth, consciousness, ecstasy. A person can be meditative and can become very silent and may miss bliss. Because meditation can make you silent, absolutely still. But unless dance happens in it, something is missing. Peace is good. Peace is very beautiful. But something is lacking in it. Bliss is lacking. When peace starts dancing, it is bliss. When peace becomes active, overflowing, it is bliss. When bliss is enclosed in a seed, it is peace. And when the seed has sprouted, not only that, but the tree has bloomed, and the flowers have come, and the seed has become a bloom, then it is samadhi. That is the highest type of religion. Peace has to dance and silence has to sing. And unless your innermost realization becomes a laughter, something is still lacking. Something has to be still done.